Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host, and thank you guys for tuning in. We have Marcy Shymoff here today, and let me tell you, you're really in for a treat. She's a New York Times bestselling author, a world-renowned transformational leader, and an expert on happiness, success, and unconditional love. She has a couple of books, Happy for No Reason, Love for No Reason. And these books have been extremely successful, along with her Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Her books have actually sold 16 million copies worldwide, 33 languages, and have topped the major bestseller list and have been on the New York Times list for, 120 plus weeks in a row. And she, you know, if that wasn't enough, she's also been the host of a PBS special called Happy for No Reason. She's been a featured teacher on something called The Secret. I'm sure most of you have heard of that one. And she's also co-leading a program right now called Your Year of Miracles for participants in about 72 countries. So yeah, she's been doing a lot. She's got a lot going on. And we really jumped into it today about what does it mean to have happiness and love without a reason, right? Nothing's connected to it. It's not because you did something, you achieved something, somebody else outside of you, or you did, you know, you did something that made it happen to have the happiness or the love. What does it mean to walk around filled without a reason? So I was intrigued by this idea. Marcy is literally a warehouse of information. I know you're going to find lots of facts along the way that will help you dig deeper into this concept of what it means to be happy, what it means to have unconditional love, and really then in the end, what does that mean to have if nothing around you changes? Thank you guys for tuning in. If you want to learn more about her, her website, happyfornoreason.com or youryearofmiracles.com. Again, appreciate everybody listening. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Hey, Marcy, how are you?
Hi, I'm so great, Lauren. So happy to get to be here with you.
I am so excited too. And you're calling in from?
From Marin County, California.
Yeah.
Northern California.
Yeah. And there are some weather elements happening over there. At least you're not going into our Chicago winter that we're just about to brace ourselves for.
No, but we're doing our best to just call in the rain. Lots of rain is needed here. So
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining. I am beyond excited. I literally looked at your resume. And I'm like, wow, where do I start? Most people have a book or maybe two. Like, you have this body of work, 16 million copies sold, 33 languages, New York Times bestselling author. But I really found a theme that I wanted to pick up on and have a conversation with you because it is just so prevalent. I see it all the time. And it's this idea of, right, most people just want to feel happier and they want more love in their life. And most people, including myself for many, many, many years, you're seeking, you're looking for that. You're looking outside of yourself. You're looking externally for it. And you think, okay, when I get there, then I will have, or, you know, it's like these things in my life, the car, the person, it's contingent on these external objects or people. And then those things change and either you never find it or it's elusive, but it's this struggle and everybody wants it nonetheless. So when I was reading your work, Happy for No Reason, Love for No Reason, that is just brilliant, right? Like, what would it mean to be happy, to have more love without a reason? It just is, right? So I want to dive into that. So, but I thought if you could start by sharing with the audience, what got you interested in this in the first place, right? Was this your story? And how did you come into this body of work?
Yeah, well, like you and like everybody, I just wanted to be happy. You know, I just wanted to have more love. I think this is, it's our nature. That's what I think we're here on the planet for, is to learn to experience greater love and greater happiness. but the real kind. So I was, my story is that I was born depressed. I came out of the womb with existential angst. I was an unhappy camper, and I had great parents. You know, I had a great family, and it was, but I had this dark cloud around me. I mean, I remember watching Romper Room and feeling like the, I think I was just an empath. I felt the suffering of the world. And so I felt depressed throughout my growing up years. My solution to that was sugar. I became a sugar addict and was probably 35 pounds overweight in high school. And when I was in my 20s, I decided, okay, I gotta conquer this happiness thing. And I set 5 goals for myself. And I figured that once I hit those 5 goals, then I'd be happy. That's what I would need to be happy. And I think a lot of people do this sort of thing, at least. And yeah. I'm just going to share with you my 5 goals, because people usually relate to this. I wanted, 1, to have a successful career helping other people. 2, to have a great husband or life partner. 3, to have wonderful friends. 4, to have a comfortable home. And 5 was to have the equivalent of Halle Berry's body. And I figured if I got all those 5, of course I'd be happy, right?
Right.
Well, I did get 4 out of the 5. I do not have Halle Berry's body, but I have a healthy body for which I'm very grateful. And I'll tell you, Laura, I worked really, really hard to get all my ducks in a row so that I could be happy. And I had a turning point moment. It was in 1998. I had at the same time 3 books in the top 5 on the New York Times bestseller list. I had just finished giving a speech to 8,000 people, and I had autographed 5,432 books. My client had a massage therapist there to massage my hand so I wouldn't get carpal tunnel. And I felt like an author rock star.
Right.
And I had just really worked hard. All this was working. And I remember that after I autographed that last book, I went up to my hotel room, which was the penthouse suite that my client had gotten for me. And this, by the way, was in Chicago, where I know you are.
Yeah.
And I went over to the windows that were overlooking Lake Michigan. Beautiful panoramic view of Lake Michigan. And I took in that view, and I turned around, and I fell onto the bed, and I burst into tears. And I burst into tears because I realized I have everything I thought I needed to be happy, and I'm still not. I still feel that emptiness in my heart, that yearning, that something's missing. And I could no longer continue to fool myself into thinking that just the next thing was going to do it for me. And I realized this is kind of the end of that road. And at that point, I dove head on into the research on happiness. I said, I'm just going to do what I can to be happy. And I interviewed all the happiness researchers. Fortunately, there was this burgeoning field of positive psychology where there was a lot of research. And then I also went and interviewed 100 what I call unconditionally happy people to find out what are they doing. And I started doing what they were doing, and it worked. Within a fairly short period of time, my happiness was totally shifting. And I went from, if you were giving me a grade back then, I went from a D+ in happiness to an A. And I'm an A. I can say that. But I'm still a work in progress. I'm still working on it, you know?
Yeah.
But it really does work. And that's why I am so committed and passionate about what we all can do to be happier.
I love it. And I mean, I relate, and I'm sure many, many of the listeners relate. It's that list you mentioned. Who doesn't have that list, right? And you mm-hmm. think, I'm going to go through these steps and I'm going to get there. And when I get there, I'm going to exhale and I'm going to find this happiness. And I've interviewed, and I, for myself as well, many people get there and it's not there. And in fact, it's worse, because it's like this, oh my God, how could I have gone down this path and been so misled? And I think a lot of culture tells us that this is the way it's going to work. And it does give us a lot of beautiful things. It just doesn't fill that core void, that sense, right, inside of yourself. So if you could explain, I love this little continuum of yours, this happiness continuum, and you have one for the love continuum, which I want to get to. But what is the happiness continuum?
Yeah, you know, that is, to me, there is a lot of research about happiness. And there's one piece of research on happiness that is the piece that explains it all. Mm. And I'll explain the happiness continuum in a minute, but first I need to explain the happiness set point.
Okay.
This explains why you these things aren't going to make you happy. So here's the research about the happiness set point. We all have a set point. It's like a thermostat setting. And no matter what happens to us, whether it's good or bad, we are going to tend to return to our original happiness set point unless we do something to change that. This is why people who win the lottery, you know, you think, oh, all I have to do is win the lottery and then I'd be happy. Well, you would be happier for a short while. But within a year, you would return to your original happiness level unless you've done something to change it. And the same happens to people in challenging times too. They generally return to their happiness set point. So the happiness set point is the key. It's the key to it all. And here's how it's determined. It's 50% genetic. You're born with it. I was not born with the good happiness genes. And you think, oh, well, that's a bummer. But let's hear the rest of it before you think that. Only 10%, tiny little piece of this whole puzzle, is based on your circumstances. So your circumstances do affect your happiness. 10%, not very much.
Yeah.
Yet that's what we're all out trying to chase after. The other 40% of our happiness set point is based in our habits.
Yeah.
Our habits of thoughts and behavior. And I'm going to take it a step further and say that there are scientists in the field of epigenetics, like Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief. And they say that our genes, that 50% that was genetic of our happiness set point, that can be changed by changing habits, which tells us that 90% of our happiness set point is our habits. Well, hallelujah. That means I can do something about it different than chasing after the circumstances to change, because the circumstances only move the needle a little bit. And so the happiness continuum that I found is that there are really four main stages of happiness. We have unhappy, depressed, that's one stage, and that's 1/4 of the population in North America is unhappy.
That's a big number.
It's a big number. Then we have happy for bad reason. Happy for bad reason is I'm going to do everything I can to fill myself up to be happier, but it's to my detriment. So these are the addictions. These are, you know, I'm gonna eat, I'm gonna drink, I'm gonna do, you know, recreational drugs that are gonna alter me, or medication. I'm gonna take medication, and there the addictions come from being at what I call happy for a bad reason, and then there's the next stage of the continuum, which is happy for a good reason, and that is I'm gonna fill up my life with a lot of good reasons to be happy. It's what we've been talking about. But the problem with that is as soon as those reasons go away, you're no longer happy.
Right.
Very shaky foundation. And we're finding that, you know, a lot in the pandemic, of course, people relying on their jobs, their income, this and that. Of course, those are going to have an effect on us. But when you have, when you're basing your happiness in being happy for those reasons, and that gets pulled away, you find yourself really in shaky territory. So what I write about and teach about is what I call happy for no reason. And what I mean by that is that you have an internal, it's an inner state of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on our circumstances. And that's the solid foundation for happiness that we all really want to have.
Right. And the reason I love this, right, is because give control.
Yes.
Right. In the end of the day, it's, how many people say, God, I'm not happy. It must be the relationship. Let me swap out the spouse, or it's the house, or it's the job. And you just keep moving the things around you thinking, when one time I was like watching one of those acrobatic shows and they have the plates that they spin all the way down the table. And I was like, God, that's my life. Like, it was like a decade ago. But you just keep, you know, shifting one more thing after the other. And then you look down and one's about to fall and break. And so you have to get back. And it's like, we just keep wanting to get to a place where everything is lined up, and then we'll feel, okay, I've done it. Or pleasure seeking, to your point, right? Like,
I have to use an analogy that I love based on what you're saying. I call it rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. Right. You know, we're just busy trying to rearrange all these chairs, getting everything perfect, but it's a sinking ship. That way of going is sinking.
Right. And so, and it's it gives a fear base because you know it's outside of you, and it's a dependency because it's like, oh my God, if these things don't work, then my happiness is outsourced, right? And that's like its own concern. So building this reservoir of happiness within ourselves, if that's the holy grail, how, like, that sounds lovely, right? And people listening are going, that sounds fantastic, but I don't know what you're talking about. So what does that mean? What are these habits? I read somewhere we're nothing but happiness, habit bundles, which I thought was the cutest thing ever, right? Like, why did I just move my hand as I'm talking? Why did I, you know, use that word? I'm not noticing everything I'm doing. I'm doing it from unconscious patterning. So if we're just these little habit bundles, how do we change them? What does it look like to create more habits around happiness? Mm-hmm. And maybe you could share one of your absolute favorites with the audience.
Yeah. Well, this is the $1 million question, of course. How do we do this? And here's the really good news. It's actually not that hard. These are small changes in habits that done consistently over time make a big change in our life. Mm-hmm. And I recommend that people don't do a whole bunch of changing at once. They pick one habit. And what I found is that there are 21 happiness habits that my happy people, happy for no reason people shared. And they fell into seven main categories. And what I first want to do is, if I can, is go through what these seven categories are so that you can see where you're the weakest. Because what I suggest is that people start wherever they're the weakest. That's where they're going to get the most leverage. And then I'll give you one or two really specific tools. But first, let's look at the whole model of what I call it is building your inner home for happiness. And Laura, you're going to be my guinea pig if that's okay. I'm going to ask you when I'm done with going through these seven areas, which area you're the weakest in.
Love it. Yes.
I know that people have a hard time remembering seven of anything. So I created this metaphor that I call building your inner home for happiness. And a home has seven main components. It's got a foundation, four corner pillars, a roof, and a garden. And here's how this relates to these seven main areas of happiness. The foundation of being unconditionally happy is taking responsibility for your life and your happiness. And what that means is not finding yourself in a victim mode in life. And how you know you're in a victim mode is if you're blaming, shaming, or complaining. Blaming others, shaming, which means blaming yourself, or complaining. Oh, it's all about that. It's all about something else, you know, complaining. So if you find yourself in blaming, shaming, and complaining a lot, the very first key for you to raise your happiness level is to start taking more responsibility for your happiness, knowing that, oh, I can do something about this. Then the four corner pillars are the pillar of the mind, the heart, the body, and the soul. The mind is our thoughts. You know, are your thoughts supporting your happiness or are your thoughts taking you down? And I think that's the one we'll come back to because that's where people have the biggest challenge. Then there's the heart. Do you live with an open heart? Do you have gratitude? Do you have loving kindness? Do you forgive easily? You know, are you generous? People who are happy all are open-hearted. Then there's the body. Do you have the biochemistry of happiness? Do you have enough endorphins, serotonin, oxytocin? And I'll tell you, that's where I needed to start. That's where I was the weakest. I had not the biochemistry of happiness. And then there's the soul. Do you feel connected to a greater energy in life? Whatever you might call that, some call it God or the divine or nature, doesn't matter. What matters is that you feel you're part of some greater energy. Then there's the roof of your home for happiness, and that has to do with your purpose in life. Are you living an inspired life? Are you doing what you are here on this planet to be doing? And then finally, there's the garden. And the garden is who you're surrounded by. Do you have a lot of weeds or toxic people in your garden? Or do you have a lot of roses and gardenias, the people who are supporting you in your happiness and that feel good to be around? So if you look at those seven areas, usually we're pretty good on one or two of them. We're okay on a few of them. And then we're really kind of weak in one or two areas. So Laura, as my guinea pig, which area or areas do you feel that you're the weakest in?
Yeah, it's such a succinct and easy way to look at it. For sure, for me, it's the soul connection. In the last year or two, I've really invested deeply into this idea. But if I'm being honest, it's really a stretch. I grew up in an atheist home, very, very hyper-intellectual family. It's just so hard for me to let go and accept that I'm being supported, that the universe is supporting me, that, right, like that whole belief that there's this greater energy and I'm connected to it. I'm deep in that process, but it's a struggle when things get harder.
Mm-hmm. I so appreciate, first of all, I love your authenticity. And of course, this is a show about authenticity. And you're such a beautiful model of authenticity. I really, really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks.
And I can share with you that I've had that same struggle throughout my life, of feeling that we live in of trusting that we live in a benevolent universe. And in fact, one of the things I found from the people I interviewed, no matter what their circumstances in life were, that they really shared this belief that we live in a loving universe and that the universe is on our side. It's in our favor. And I think that that is one of the things that I suggest that people do, is that if you have a hard time trusting that it's a loving universe, you just try it on. You just practice. You pretend. You act as if for a while. And that means if something's going what you think is not your way, because if we live in a loving universe, then everything's on our side. Everything's in our favor. And so if something's going not the way you want it to be going, I suggest you ask this question. If this is happening for my greater good, or if this is happening for a higher purpose, what would that be? And just kind of lean into that and see what that is. I think that the trusting that this is a loving universe is actually a muscle that we need to build. And some of us not so much, you know, some people, they've got that one down. And yet it's another one of these areas that they have challenge with. Like, as I said, for me, it was not having the physiology of happiness. But the one, Laura, that I find the most common for people is the thoughts, their mind. I think that people's minds really take them down. And so if we can, I'd just love to spend a minute or two talking about that and giving you a practice. Is that okay?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, without question, that's where I started my journey. The idea that your thoughts are not necessarily true and that you can do something about them, right, is a profound idea and an important one. Please, whatever you have to offer there.
So the average person has 60,000 thoughts a day. And for the average person, 80% of those are negative. It's what scientists call the negativity bias. We inherited this from our caveman ancestors, who needed to remember the negatives way more than, you know, to survive. And we don't need that tendency the way that they did. And yet we still have held on to the negative Velcro Teflon syndrome, that our minds are just like Velcro for the negative. They just stick to us. And they're like Teflon for the positive. They slide off of us. And just a simple example is, if you get 10 compliments in a day and one criticism, what do you remember at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Well, most people remember the criticism.
Oh, yeah.
Not the compliments, right?
Well, you don't just remember.
So
you repeat it.
Reverse that tendency.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't just remember it. Sorry, you repeat it, right? I mean, it's like you don't repeat the compliments 50 times, but you definitely need to rehearse the negative one and feel bad for months. Like, people hold on to that.
Right. We just hold on to that. So happy people have reversed that tendency. And they've created new neural pathways in the brain for happiness. And I'm going to share with you the simple scientific technique ways to create new neural pathways in your brain for happiness so that you start tending more towards the positive. Three simple steps. And if you're listening to this, write these down because they're so easy, but you want to do them. So number one, be on the lookout for the positive. Pretend that you are a detective and your job is to look for what's good. One of the women I interviewed for Happy for No Reason pretends that she's the Academy Awards committee. And her job is to give out 5 Academy Awards every day. And so she is always on the lookout for where to give out an Academy Award. So she sees a little cute, fluffy white dog out on her walk and she goes, oh, that dog gets the cutest dog of the day award. And that's the game she plays. If you've got kids, it's a wonderful game to play with kids. But just be on the lookout for 5 great things a day that you can give an Academy Award to. Yeah. That's number one. Number two, savor the good for at least 20 seconds. Scientists say that it takes 20 seconds for the good to really soak in. So we've got to really savor that. If you're seeing a beautiful sunset, don't just say, oh, that's really pretty. But take it into your body and let it soak into your cells. And then number three, go for a 3-to-1 ratio, meaning 3 positives for every 1 negative. So every time you've got one of these negatives coming up, you got to quickly replace it with 3 positives. And these 3 steps will help quickly create new neural pathways in the brain for the positive.
I love it. And this aligns with positive psychology. I know these studies have been done and it can be very powerful, right? You can make new neural nets quickly. You can experience a shift in happiness. It's not like you have to do this for 5 years. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. And that's what I love about it is that I tend to be a pretty impatient person and I don't want to wait 5 years for change. What we found is that people, when they take baby steps, you just take baby steps, but you do it consistently. It creates change in a short period of time. I've had people within a month tell me, oh my God, I'm really feeling different.
I love it. And all of this habit formation, everything we're talking about, I just want to, again, point out what is so, to me, empowering, right? Like I think a lot about this idea of what's empowered and disempowered in my life. The victim, the blaming, feeling like things are out of your control, which leads to fear. If you claim this idea that the happiness you seek is within you, and it's just a matter of learning the habits, which by the way, in her book, for everybody listening, there's PDFs that go along with it and there's endless exercises. So you can do these. They're very, very, very simple, very well articulated. But by doing these small exercises, you can increase your own happiness. You don't have to wait for the job. You don't have to wait for the money you think you need to buy that car or whatever it is that you feel at the end of the rainbow would bring you this happiness. You can have it today. And then this thing I wanted to focus on next was being in a state of happiness, right? Being in the vibration of happiness, learning how to be in a positive state today that increases what comes towards us. You've been in The Secret and you've worked a lot with the power of attraction, the law of attraction. Can you speak to that just a little bit?
Absolutely. We are constantly co-creating in life and we're co-creating based on the energetics. The energy that we're putting out, you know, there is this idea that like attracts like. And so our thoughts, our words, our feelings, and our actions. So our thoughts, our words, our feelings, and our actions are an energetic that we are putting out into the universe. And we tend to draw to us based on that energetic. And so the more we actually have new neural pathways for the positive, the more we easily see the positive that's out there, the more it shows up for us. And it's a self-perpetuating cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, so I get this. I understand it. But you know, then you similarly talk about love from this perspective. And maybe it's just the point in my life, but I am so fascinated in this right now. Love being external, wanting more love from outside, the idea of what unconditional love looks like, feeling that the people around us bring love to us? Or, right, like, why aren't they giving us enough love? Or why haven't I found my soulmate or somebody to fall in love with or receive love from? But similarly, you talk about love from the same perspective, that there's this unconditional love within us. I've been writing from the Akashic Records, and I was sharing with you right before the show, but this is exactly what I'm getting from this energetic space. And I'm so excited to be writing about, but it's a newer concept, but it's so freeing. What if that's within us as well? So could you share with the audience, you know, how do you view, well, that you have the love continuum, right? So I'd love to hear about that. And then how do we increase this sense of love within ourselves, just like we can increase happiness?
Yeah. So another, thank you for asking these great questions. I like many people, have always tended to look outside of myself for love, you know, and that just not a great thing. Same way we look outside of ourselves for happiness, we look outside of ourselves for love. Yeah. And then it doesn't quite work. Nope. But then you read these, you read stories, you read books of great, wise, enlightened, awake teachers throughout life, or people throughout life. And they all say the same thing. They all say that we are love.
Yep.
And you know, okay, that's beautiful. We are love. So what? How does that apply to me?
Yep.
You know, that sounds great. Good for you. Glad to know you are love, but not so much for me. And I wanted to go into, well, what does this mean? How do I get there? It's the same thing. There are ways that we actually connect in with the inner, the essence that we are, and know ourselves as love. And how freeing. Now I don't need other people to be a certain way for me to feel love.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we really want, is that freedom to feel, to experience that love from the inside out. And what I mean by love for no reason is the same thing I mean by happy for no reason. Love for no reason is an unconditional state of love that doesn't depend on anybody else or any other circumstances. I generate it. And, you know, to me, when I look at these people, these wise people who are living an awakened life, and they're saying that, I go, I believe that. I believe them. So now it's just a matter of how do we get there ourselves? And it's the same thing as we spoke about with happiness. It's about establishing certain habits that allow us to experience our inner state of love.
Again, it's so empowered. And right, I've read every great work and every spiritual teacher. And I sort of think, I don't know, it really almost annoyed me for a while, if I'm going to be totally honest. It's like,
sure.
Oh, right? Like, love's within and self-love and just be positive. And I'm like, really though? Really though? Or are you just living in a monastery away from the real world, not in a relationship? And so you do meditations all day and I don't know. You're not part of the real world, but it is. It's the same. You can generate this internal sense of well-being anywhere, all the time. It is just learning the tricks I'm experiencing too. So could you share, what are some ways people could increase that internal love temperature so that they, because you fill yourself up and then you give that to the world, yourself, and everybody's in that exchange. And that's an easier way than needing it to fill yourself up.
Yeah. What I say is, instead of trying to extract love from everything around you, you're actually bringing love to everything around you. And so I love that you're asking about what to do, because to me, that's where the rubber meets the road, is what can we do? And of course, there are a number of things we can do. You and I both love the work of Margaret Paul on inner bonding. And I just praise that work. I think that's wonderful. I'm going to give you two simple things right now that everybody can do, just super easy. And one of them is, you know, when we love things, we take care of them. But what I notice is that many people don't take care of themselves. They don't listen to what they need. So you might be busy out there taking care of everybody else and filling everybody else's needs, but not paying attention to your own. So this is a very simple practice. Again, it involves just asking a question. Twice a day, I want you to ask this simple question: what's the most loving thing I could do for myself right now? Now you can write that on a post-it and stick it on your computer, or stick it on your mirror, I don't care where. But just simply stop and ask, what's the most loving thing I could do for myself right now? And then stop and go do it. Now, it may be I can go get a glass of water. It may be I can call a friend up. It may be I can just take a moment and close my eyes and get centered. I don't know what it's going to be, but what matters is the simple act that you're stopping and asking and then doing it starts reminding you, starts habituating you to listen to yourself and care for yourself.
So Marcy, I just want to stop you there because this was such an essential thing and I don't want it to slip past everybody. I kind of thought it was more syrupy than that when I was having negative feelings about like self-love, being like, I love myself, right? Because don't stop and you said get some water or close your eyes. It doesn't need to be these sort of pedantic, ridiculous things that don't mean anything to you. It's truly, what do you need right now? And then people say to themselves, well, it's selfish to ask about my needs. I'm not saying to go buy a Porsche. It's just close your eyes, get some water, some basic things. And so that, while it sounds small, it was transformational for me to lose this sort of inner mantra silliness that I don't need to hear that I'm a great person in this particular moment. I just need some water, right? And I'm not going to feel guilty that I shouldn't get it because I should be doing something else because I'm truly, it's okay. I'm going to go get myself some water and feel good about that and move on with my day. It doesn't need to be so complicated.
Absolutely. You are spot on with that because it's just a habituation to listening to ourselves and honoring ourselves. It means, okay, my needs are important and I'm going to take care of them and they're not big, you know. Now, sometimes they may be. You may be in a situation where, oh my God, right now I need some support. Yeah. So it may be that you're going to call up a friend.
Yeah.
Or it may be you're going to go out and for me, it's getting a little bit of exercise. It may be I'm going to go out and I'm going to walk for 5 minutes.
Yep.
What matters is that you do it.
Yep.
And so then the second thing that I'm going to share with you is a super simple technique to get you back into your heart, into what's called heart rhythm coherence. And it's a technique that I learned from the Institute of Heart Math. They are the world's leading researchers on the heart as it impacts our happiness and our well-being. And they found some really interesting things. They found that when we're angry or upset or frustrated for just 5 minutes, it can suppress our immune system for up to 6 hours.
Wow.
But when we're feeling love and gratitude and ease, that for just 5 minutes, that can strengthen our immune system for up to 6 hours. So what happens with our hearts and how we're feeling has an ongoing long-term effect in our bodies. And these days, you know, we certainly want to have strong immune systems. So I'm not going to do a 5-minute process. It's going to be under 2 minutes. Okay. What I want everybody to do is I want you to do it along with me. And I want you to notice, do you feel a shift? And what we're doing is we're going from heart rhythm incoherence, which is our normal state. Our rhythms are pretty kind of erratic. And we're going to move into heart rhythm coherence. And Laura, once again, you're going to be my guinea pig.
I'm
okay?
In. Yes.
All right. So you can do this with your eyes opened or closed. But if you're in a place where you're able to close your eyes, go ahead and close your eyes because it goes a little bit deeper. So with your eyes closed, again, 3 simple steps. The first step is to simply put your hand over your heart. This is called heart focus, heart attention. Putting your hand on your heart starts the flow of a chemical called oxytocin. And oxytocin is known as the love hormone. It's what we feel when we feel bonded and connected with other people. But just by putting your hand on your heart, you're creating more oxytocin in your body. And now the second step is called heart-focused breathing. Just imagine that you're breathing into your heart and breathing out of your heart. You're inhaling into your heart and you're exhaling out of your heart. And you do this at your own pace, just focusing on each in-breath breathing into the heart and each out-breath breathing out of the heart. And you may notice that you already feel a little bit different. And then the final step, on each in-breath, imagine that you're breathing in love, ease, and compassion. Your exhales, you can just exhale normally, exhale as though it's coming out of your heart. But each in-breath, focus on breathing into your heart love, ease, and compassion. Now, if you're a visualizer, you may want to think or see someone or something that allows you to feel that. It could be a person. It could be a beloved four-legged. It could be nature. Or you can think of a memory that allows you to feel love, ease, and compassion. Or if those don't come easily to you, you can just internally, silently to yourself say just the words love, ease, and compassion, and it'll have the same effect. So two more breaths on each inhale, breathing in love, ease, and compassion. And exhaling one last time, taking into your heart love, ease, and compassion. And on the next exhale, you can take your hand away and you can slowly open your eyes. And as you're opening your eyes, I just want everyone to just notice in your body, how do you feel any different than you did about a minute and a half ago when we started this? And, you know, do you feel different in your body? Do you feel different emotionally? What has shifted? And so, Laura, you were willing to be my guinea pig. Tell me what has shifted for you.
Yeah. There's a combination of a release. So mm-hmm. I feel sort of a tension or stress in my neck or back or wherever I've been holding a little stress in my body. It seems to dissipate. And then like that inner beam of stillness or calm seemed to go up exponentially, right? So it's the combination of release and stillness and ease. Mm. Like I feel centered.
Centered. Beautiful. So people feel different things. Some people just feel grounded. They feel balanced. They feel what you said, centered, release. All of these are, some people have physical sensations. They might feel some warmth in their heart or some tingling. And all of these are signs that you're going into what science calls the love response. There's the stress response. We all know what that is. You feel it, you know, you're stuck in traffic and you're late for something, you're in the stress response, and it's got its own brain activity, its own heart rhythms, and its own physiology, its own biochemistry. Well, likewise, the love response has its own brain activity, heart rhythms, and biochemistry, and you can habituate going to the love response. So doing this one time is just a nice experience. It's not going to make a difference in your life, really. But what I suggest is you could do this a couple times a day for the next week. And you will start to habituate the love response. Do it for a minute or two. You can do it while you're standing in line at the grocery store. You do not need to close your eyes. I do it when I'm sitting on the phone. Now, I've done this hundreds and thousands of times. Now all I have to do is put my hand on my heart and automatically the whole love response starts in me. So what I'm talking about are simple techniques, simple things. Yeah. And don't do everything I've said today. I've given you three or four different practices to do. Just pick one. And do it for the next week or two and use your life as an experiment and see if you feel any different.
Yeah. Yeah. Increasing that love flow within you, feeling that fullness within yourself, sharing that and getting rid of that desperate, clinging, needing, or cut off sensation from love, right? Depending on where you find yourself, it's a game changer and it's so empowering. So then the ultimate question, right? Unconditional love. Right? People talk about it, just like we talk about love within or everybody talks about this unconditional love. And I'm a mom. I feel I've experienced unconditional love in that sense. But how would you define unconditional love? Is that within yourself that you share? Is that something that, how would you define that?
Very much like I define love for no reason. Yeah. Unconditional love is that inner state of love that doesn't depend on circumstances or conditions or other people or what other people are doing or what's happening. It's not that you aren't aware of what, it's not like you're in some la-la state of denial about life. It's that you have this love inside that is just so solid. And I can give a few examples of my experiences of people. I've had the pleasure of being, the honor of being with His Holiness the Dalai Lama a few times in person. And he just emanates love. It's just, he's in touch with that inner essence of his divinity. And I think that's what it truly is. It's when people are in touch with the divine within. And it's like, oh, everything else is like, you know, it's the play of life. And Laura, I really believe, I've read so many cases, as you may have as well, of people who've had near-death experiences, and then they come back and they say that at the end of our lives, we're really only asked one main question, and that is, how much did you grow in your capacity to give and receive love? And I think what really that means is, how much did you grow in the connection with your essence of love? How much did you awaken to who you really are? So that's what we're on the planet for. This is ultimately what we're here for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And so on that, right, and finishing here, but while that is all true, this struggle, right, that we find ourselves in, the struggle of somebody's done something to us, we are in a very difficult situation. It's mm-hmm. not just that we feel victimized, but something very difficult mm-hmm. has happened. Right. And what I'm trying to get myself around is this idea that the struggle, that the challenge, that the lesson in there is the lesson that my soul needs to grow, and that the universe is offering me exactly what I need, although this is really difficult. And how do I keep this love and happiness flowing simultaneously in the face of what does mm-hmm. not feel
yeah.
like a particularly good thing, like, right? Just being honest, right. Like, I'm not enjoying this at all. And if I look back over my life, there's many of those, and I get to the other side and it's a, oh my God, I gained so much from those experiences and I've grown so much. But how do we think about the universe being friendly and supporting us in our growth when it's so difficult, right? Sometimes.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Laura.
Yeah.
I'm going to get really out there for you.
Good. I love it.
Because you're studying the Akashic Records, and the Akashic Records basically is the record of our lifetimes. And it's been said that we actually chose what's going on for us. This is it's not just that, oh my God, this is happening, but on some soul level, I chose this. I mean, that's really a stretch for people. So if you can't go there, don't worry about it. But here's what I want to say. When you build your emotional immune system, and what I mean by that is when you establish this higher happiness set point and this inner state of love, unconditional love, when those things happen, number one, you're better able to deal with them. Because you have a greater strength, a greater resilience. It's like if somebody around you has a cold and you, what do you do to build? You build your own emotion, you build your own physical immune system so you don't catch the cold. Mm-hmm. We have a higher happiness set point and a stronger sense of state of unconditional love. Those things that happen don't throw us off as much. But then when they happen, you also lean into them rather than resist them. And you go, okay, pretend that you drew this in for some reason, for some great lesson or gift. It's that question I referred to earlier. If this is happening for a higher purpose, or if this is happening for my benefit, what's the gift in this for me? And just lean into that and see how it changes. I tell people, don't take anything I say for granted. You know, don't take my word for it. Try it on, see if it works, see how it shifts you. And I know every time. I mean, it's not that we're not going to have challenges. I've had a little upset yesterday. And I have wonderful friends who actually, I called up and I said, this is happening. I can't believe this is happening. And they said, Marcy, put your hand on your heart, do the inner ease technique. And they did it with me. And they said, now ask if this is happening for a higher purpose. What is that? And I had to look inside myself and see, okay, this is for me. This is not about what they did. This is about what I'm here to learn. So, you know, surround yourself with people who remind you of that. continue to listen to these kinds of conversations that Laura, that you offer, because that's what we need. We've got a lot of gunkiness out there. And we need to continue to remind ourselves of how to stay on this kind of a track. And I know we're getting close on, you know, time, but I always want to end with one concept. And that is, you mentioned this earlier, you know, people might think that this is selfish. This is so selfish to want to be happier. And what about the world? And my answer to that is, I believe that this is the biggest thing we can each do to contribute to a better world. Because when we raise our happiness set point, when we feel more love inside ourselves, we actually affect the people all around us, and ultimately we affect the world. And there's a beautiful Chinese proverb that I love to share about this, and it goes like this. It says, when there is light in the soul, there will be beauty in the person. When there is beauty in the person, there will be harmony in the house. When there is harmony in the house, there will be order in the nation. And when there is order in the nation, there will be peace in this world. And my prayer and my wish for all of us is that we know that light and that love and that happiness in our own hearts. And through that, we help create more peace here on this planet of ours that certainly needs it.
Oh, all right. Bring it. Thank you. I'm going to end there. That was absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. Everybody listening, there's just a warehouse of information. Check out her books. Come to my website. If you want more information, Marcy, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can go to happyfornoreason.com. Very simple. Happyfornoreason.com. And actually on there, I have a gift for everybody of a workbook that has all 21 of the happiness habits and these each of the practices that you can use, including some of the ones we did today. So that's there for you. And just really, I want to appreciate everybody for being here for this conversation today, because I think that this conversation is truly what can, how we together, we can change the world. And I appreciate so much everybody's attention on being happier and feeling greater love in their lives.
Couldn't agree more. And if there's ever a time that I think we all could go inside, find some more happiness, find some more love so that we have more to share, right? This would be the moment. So thank you for sharing these gifts with everybody listening.
Thank you, Laura.